Hello and welcome to Red Hawk's Walk, Exercise for Life, a podcast brought to you by Seattle University's Kinesiology Department. Kinesiology is the study of how the human body functions, and our department wants to share knowledge that will allow anybody to function a little healthier, regardless of that body's shape, ability, age, gender, or race. Each of our podcasts will highlight a different aspect of our field and help translate existing research into everyday practice. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we are turning the podcast pink with what is sure to be a great conversation about breast health and the characteristics of a good sports bra. With me today on today's podcast is Senior Professor Julie Steele out of University of Wollongong, just south of Sydney, Australia. Welcome, Julie. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning here. Good afternoon there, I believe.
That's right. That's right. I'm so glad you could get up so early to help us out with today's podcast. Now, Julie, you have had a lauded career as a biomechanist. You have been on every one of the biomechanics leadership councils across the world. You have spoken at practically every conference, and you have dabbled in a lot of different areas of biomechanics. So why breast biomechanics? Why was this such an important space for you to investigate?
Well, really what happened was I was working in the area of knees, and one of my students went down to the Australian Institute of Sport. And while she was down there just on a year's leave, she was approached by a bra company. And because she was the only female at that stage, you know, biomechanics was very, very male dominated at the time. So she did this very small study about breasts. And she came back to our lab, this is in the 90s, and she said, Julie, I think this is an area that there's just not enough research in. So we sat down and we wrote a review paper. And that was published in the late 90s in Sports Medicine. First time in my life that I've actually received handwritten letters from women around the world going, oh, thank you. Finally, someone is starting to address an issue that is very dear to my heart. And so it kind of kickstarted this whole area that we realized just had no research in it, and people just hadn't explored the structure of the breasts and how to support the breasts. And yet, you know, over 50% of the population of women, all of who have breasts of some size, shape, or whatever. And it's just such a vital area that needs to be researched.
And so since the 1990s, what have we found? What do we know specifically? Because when we talk about it, we think, what is biomechanics? Biomechanics being this interaction between forces causing movement. What does biomechanics have to do with the breast? And to be honest, it is got substantially a large amount to do with the breast. So what have we found out since the late 90s and that early seminal work of yours?
Well, if we take a step back and think exactly that, what is biomechanics? It's understanding the forces applied to biological structures, and the breasts are biological structures. They're part of the human anatomy. So what we do is combine our understanding of the structure, what holds the breast in place, and actually they're very poorly supported by the anatomical structure. So you're basically relying on your skin that unfortunately gets thinner and less elastic as you get older. And they've got anchors to the torso, the chest. So here's this anatomy, this kind of unstructured mass that has to be supported. Now, go back to some basic physics and you think, okay, Newton's laws of motion, a very classical biomechanical thing, force equals mass times acceleration. So the forces that are applied to the body by the breast, if you have gravity acting through a mass, and we can work out the mass, how much a breast weighs by looking at its volume and its density, and we can use biomechanical methods to then measure the acceleration. So the larger the mass, the bigger the breasts and the faster they move, the greater the forces applied to the body. And you've got problems like that force, it's gravity going through the breasts, it creates what we call a torque, a turning effect, and that tends to go through the upper spine, the thoracic spine. So you have women with very large breasts, and when they start moving, they start to have extremely high forces bending their torsos over. We call it thoracic kyphosis. You get a bending in the upper spine. And if you don't support the breast properly, those forces can be enough to cause pain. And we can start talking, you know, about all the effects in a moment. But so understanding the biomechanics can help us understand what we need to support. Because again, if you're going to design a bra, what are you trying to support? What is the structure? What are the forces involved? And what are the effects of those forces? So biomechanics has given us the facts and the methods and the tools to better understand that. Now we've learned a lot, but we also, the more we learn, the more we know we don't know. And this is why, you know, people say, oh, surely bras aren't that difficult. They're incredibly complex structures. The breasts are so varied around this world, and we really need to explore many, many more incidences of types of movement that women evolve in. So most of the research at the moment has been young, fit, healthy Caucasian women, and we're just ignoring a whole lot of women out there, older women, women who've had breast cancer, women of different ethnic and racial backgrounds, and all that will affect their breasts. So we know a lot, but there's a lot we don't know.
And when you were talking about the biomechanics, you were talking about that spine curvature and the stress and the strain that's coming to specifically that thoracic spine. So the thoracic spine being that spine that's attached to our rib cage and moving into that space. What about the tissue biomechanics? So what's happening to, you mentioned that the skin that's trying to hold it up, it starts to get less elastic, it starts to get thinner as we get older. Are there other aspects of tissue mechanics that are applied with those forces and with those motions that are increasing risk of different breast health implications?
That's a really interesting thing. There's a lot of speculation out there. You, there's books like Dress to Kill that, oh my gosh, if you don't support the breast, you're going to cause injuries, that's going to cause cancer. There is no evidence at this point in time to show that if you have a breast injury or your breast moved too much, it's going to cause cancer. That's not the problem. The problem is we know how important it is to be physically active. Being out there, being regularly physically active is vital for physical and for mental health. And we especially know that during this COVID outbreak at the moment, where you can get out there and regularly exercise, it can do wonders. What we're finding is that breast discomfort. So if you go out there and exercise, many women, a high percentage of women, can have what we call exercise-induced breast discomfort. Their breasts move. If they're not well supported, it does affect the tissues and it just causes pain. It's uncomfortable. And we've actually have evidence now to show, particularly with larger breast women, that their breasts can actually cause so much pain that it's become a barrier to physical activity. So it's one of the known indicators now that we need to look at as health professionals to go, my goodness, are your breasts well supported? If not, it's likely to cause some discomfort and pain, and you really need to make sure that you address that as a barrier. In terms of breast cancer, what's really, really worrying is that not being able to find a comfortable bra to exercise in has the third highest barrier to women's post-breast cancer surgery being able to exercise. And yet most people don't really think about that. It's something that we can get in there and intervene with to make these women able to be active. And why it's so important for breast cancer survivors is because we know that being physically active can be very helpful in terms of secondary recurrence of breast cancer.
So what I've seen happening in a lot of the research that you've been presenting lately is that you're combining that very quantitative biomechanics data with the qualitative feedback and survey on pain and breast discomfort with the women. What have been some of the more surprising findings that you've seen in that sort of breast pain, breast discomfort space?
I think it's imperative, if we go back and look at the sciences, but it's imperative that biomechanics is very much about measuring things, so measuring mass, measuring motion. And you have to understand that data that you get. You have to be also combining it with the qualitative data. You have to be asking the women how they feel. It's a little bit like if we design the best bra mechanically, but don't ask women whether they wear it, there's no point. There's no point having the most spectacular products and no feedback into it. So in terms of the things we've found, it's one, we're just absolutely mortified at how many women experience discomfort. If we also go back and another area we're looking at with breasts is breast injuries. And we recently did a survey of Australian women. These were elite athletes. So they were at the international, national level. There was over 300 and about 350 of them. And many of these women are experienced breast injuries during sport, particularly during the contact sports. Of those women that we surveyed, only 10% had ever actually reported their breast injury to a coach, a trainer, to anyone, basically. And we're thinking, why on earth are they not telling anyone? And there's a couple of reasons. Is that no one asked them. If you do injury surveillance work, there is never a category for a breast injury. The women often think, well, you know, I can't really talk about it, and what could they do about it? It's a soft tissue injury. We could easily have typical soft tissue injury treatment for that injury, And what's more concerning is not only they're not telling one, they are believing, about 30% of the belief, it's affecting their performance negatively. They can't run as fast because it hurts. They won't tackle in sport because they're scared. So it seems to be a taboo subject. And yet, so what we're saying with whether it be breast pain or breast injuries, we need to start normalizing the conversation. Breast is part of your body. If you're an athlete, if you're a recreational runner, if you're just someone who wants to go for a walk, you should be able to do that comfortably. You shouldn't expect to be uncomfortable. And I think that's one of the problems. There is this myth that, oh, bras are going to be uncomfortable, my boobs are going to hurt, you know, put up with it. That shouldn't be the case. We should be able to go out there and be comfortable.
And the other area that you've been working in lately has been with armed forces, so females in the armed forces and the breast support and breast health in that space. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing in that area?
Yeah, well, again, as I said before, really this work with breasts extends to the whole population. And if you ask in a task like even the police force, the fire brigade, the armed forces, if you're a female in there doing active duties, you still also could have these same problems. And that's been what we're finding. This was very preliminary work about looking at, can we come up with a much more comfortable bra? Most of the armor that is designed has been based on male torso shapes. And we again had the idea that these particular armor are given to these women. There's not a lot of choice in sizing. The women are not just smaller men. Women have a different shape. Women have different dimensions, and we need to make sure. So it's the interaction between the bra and the armor that is the problem. And again, the work is all just going to be published now, so a lot of it's just coming out. But it's this whole idea that, yes, these women in the military, in the Australian Defence Forces, are experiencing breast discomfort. And again, that discomfort is being high enough to impede their ability to perform operational tasks. So you can start to think, my goodness, if they can't perform operational tasks properly because of breast discomfort, my goodness, that's something we need to deal with. And to the credit of the military, they really are stepping in now and having a look at this whole design of armour and the interaction with the bras that the women are wearing, because they have to be seen together. They operate together. And again, there's not going to be one ideal solution. We're all so different. What will suit me will not suit the next person. So it's looking at general concepts of trying to find products that will match your shape, your needs, your age. Because as we said before, that your tissue mechanics, unfortunately, you know, as young as 20, you start losing some of the elasticity of your breast tissue. You know, the thinness by 40, I'm sorry, it's really downhill from there in terms of the anatomical structures. And so the bra that I'm going to need at my age is going to be very different in terms of the support it provides compared to someone who is very young with much different skin qualities.
Well, so let's talk about bras for a little bit. So as you said, there are some general characteristics that we need to match to. So what are some of those characteristics we need to be looking for in a bra that are going to help us to support our breasts in the right ways and to reduce that breast pain?
Sure. Now, again, so many people contact us all the time and say, what's the best bra for me? And there isn't a simple answer. You cannot go and say, this is the best bra. Also, what is available internationally is very different. And what is acceptable internationally is very different. So culturally, for example, in Asia, it's not appropriate to show any profile of the nipple. And yet in Australia, we're not so worried about that as long as the breasts are being supported. So even the structure will be dependent on your cultural values. I recently published with my colleague Deidre McGee a review paper, and that has a whole table, a very extensive list of specific things that you can go and look for. And hopefully you may be able to link to that in the bottom of the podcast. And we also have what's called a sports bra app. And again, I'm more than delighted. It's free. It's actually available on any platform. The idea was, it was made many years ago, which are trying to update it. But the idea is it just goes through some very simple steps that if you go into a shop, where do you start? And it look at your age and your activity level. But there are simple things to look at the components. So your cups of your bra. We know there are two types of bras. There's what we call encapsulation bars, which have two individual cups, and they tend to try to lift and hold the breasts in terms of support mechanism. And that's different to what we have, the crop tops or the compression bras, which tend to be more so for smaller breasted women, and they tend to squish your breasts against your chest. And the idea of that is to try, as I said before, about the torque around the thoracic spine. And the idea there is to bring the breast closer in towards the chest, so there's less distance between the thoracic spine and where that mass is. So the torque is therefore less around the spine. So there's two mechanisms. And then there's hybrid versions of these bras. So you can now buy encapsulation bras that will lift and hold with compression over the top, which will try and squish them in. And that's very important for very larger breasted women, because often those women have to wear two bras to get the support they need. But simple thing, make sure if it's a sports bra that your breasts are fully enclosed. We're not trying to look sexy with a sports bra, because if the breasts are popping over the top, they're not going to be supported. So we do need a higher neckline to make sure they're encased. If you're going to use underwire, and that underwire is more for shape than support, you've got to make sure that that underwire doesn't dig into your breast tissue. It must be sitting around on your rib cage, not in your breast. Straps must be broad enough, because again, go back to biomechanics. You're looking at the pressure that's created, it's the force per unit area. The wider the straps, the less the pressure. And we've had case studies of women who've actually had numbness of their little finger because the bra straps have dug in. And you think, well, how does that happen? Well, your nerve supply, the brachial plexus across to your whole arm, goes across that shoulder. And if you have constant compression of those nerves and then you chuck your handbag over it, you're in trouble. One of the probably most important things to look for too, the band of your bra provides most support. The straps are secondary to hold in place. So you need to make sure that band is wide enough, again, to spread that load, but also to provide that firm anchor under your breasts to provide that support structure. Now, if you lift your arms and your band's riding up and it's moving, it's not going to be providing that support structure. That band should be broad. It should be sitting around your torso nice and horizontally. It shouldn't ride up at the back. So there's these really simple things to look for: band, straps, cup. And then you can start looking at things like clips. When you buy a bra, don't go and buy one that you have to put it onto the tightest clip to make sure it's tight enough, because as soon as it stretches, it's going to be too loose. So the idea is think about how that bra will wear and the material properties. So again, I'm happy to give you that list or the link to the list, which has incredible amount of detail about the material. Now, if you're in Australia, the worst thing you want is thick, heavy padded cups, because they become like sweat buckets. You know, right. You go out there and run, it's not appropriate. So again, your own climate, the environment that you work in, the materials will differ. And so I think have a look at the cups, the band, the straps, how it clips together, and the type of exercise you're going to do.
And so with all of that, I'm going to segue in, because you have dabbled in some bra design as well. And we think about smart technology being a watch that can tell you how many steps you've done, or a heart rate monitor, or something in that space. But you've in fact actually started really innovating in that smart technology space for breast health, and have moved forward with something that is called a bionic bra, right? So I want to hear more about that, because I feel like wearing it would make me a superhero.
Again, look, I smile, because we started working on this way back in the 90s. And at the time, no one really could understand what this whole idea of smart technology was. And we had a couple of people say, it'll never take off. It was initially called the smart bra. You've got to have some catchy name, whether it's the smart or bionic. The bionic was the upgraded version. The whole concept was, the problem with most supportive sports bras is they're too tight and they're uncomfortable. So you're sitting there at your desk, you don't need that very tight supportive bra. So you put this particular smart bra on, and it's just your everyday bra that is nice and relaxed. Oh my gosh, suddenly you have to get up, you have to run for the bus or something. You know, fire alarm goes off, you've got to run. And your breasts need that additional support. The concept of the smart bra is it has components called sensors that could actually detect the magnitude, so how much your breasts bounce and how frequently they bounce. It sends that information within the bra to what we call actuators. These are like artificial muscles. They tighten things up. So the bra goes, oh gosh, the breasts are bouncing faster and they're bouncing more. I need to tighten up. So they tighten up like a sports bra to provide you that extra support. When they then detect that you no longer need it, they relax. So it's an interactive bra that responds to your needs. Now, we did get the bra to what I call the bench top. So in other words, we had Emma. Emma was our model. It was a torso, a dummy, a plastic model you see in the shops, but she had silicone breasts. And so we had the idea that the bra could go on Emma. We put on a mechanical shaker and it worked in the lab. We managed to then also put it onto a model in the lab, a girl who was running on a treadmill, and we've shown the proof of concept. The biggest challenge is to get that technology into a bra that, one, is aesthetically pleasing, and two, more importantly, you can throw in the washing machine. Because I had the guy say, well, do you really need to put in the washing machine? I said, I'm sorry, most females would want to wash their sports bra after they've been out there running. So that's the challenge. Although the guys I'm working with are amazing. They're looking at fabric, batteries, they're looking at all kinds of things. So is it feasible? Proof of concept, we've shown it works. And it does decrease your breast bounce. Is it going to be on the shelf next week? No way, because there's a long time to go to get that technology from the bench top to the washing machine.
So with that ability to be variable in its comparison, does that then mean that all of those individual factors that you have in terms of risk for breast health or just how your breasts are shaped and firmed, is that going to be less of a factor of an issue in a bra like this bionic bra that is able to adjust to your needs?
Ultimately, that's where we go. I mean, you still need, obviously, variation in sizes because you can only tighten up so much and there's such a diversity. We did a study recently characterising the shape of Australian women's breasts. And so we had a 3D scanner. So the women found Celeste Coleman, who's a PhD student, or sorry, she's graduated with a PhD, she's an academic now. She travelled Australia with scanners and she scanned. So to get the three-dimensional shape and volume of over 300 women's breasts. And these were from, I think, 18 years of age up to 84. Some of these breasts were up to basically think of putting a 2 to 3 litre milk bottle sitting there on your breasts. Now, I don't know what the translation is. We use different measurement systems, but these were 3,000 mils of huge breasts. So there's a very, very big variety out there. And so no one bra, and even a smart bra, would have to come in slightly different sizes, but hopefully you could tune it. Ultimately, you'd have a little button or a dial, and you could say, this is the amount of extra support I want when I need it. Again, a bit futuristic, but hey, don't underestimate what science can do these days.
Absolutely. And just for that conversion, I think we're thinking about a half-gallon milk jug at that point in time. So. It's quite substantial is, I think,
very
the answer
very substantial.
That we're looking for in that. So are there other places besides the smart technology that we're going with the science to make breast health less taboo, right? This idea that we should have to hide an injury or hide our pain. So is there a way that we're moving forward in that space? Is there a way that we're moving forward with the science and understanding the breast health? I love the idea of these breast scanners, right? And having lived in Australia, I'm thinking, where'd you go to do this? You know, trying to figure out, are we busking on a sidewalk saying, hey, can I scan your breast for this? So just trying to understand those important aspects of what else do we need to know to make that science so much better and to make our education of that space so much better.
To me, one of the most important things is education. And we've been trying to do that by doing podcasts like this, by doing talks, by contacting the media when we do have a news story about breast. We have to normalise that conversation. And I think it needs to start in Australian context in the schools. I think the American context, you tend to have much of your sport happening through university sectors and through a school system as well. We need to be educating young girls. We did originally develop that sports bra app to pitch to the government to come up with a resource that would be available in every single school in Australia and potentially worldwide. And the idea was that at that stage, we had a female sports minister, we had Julia Gillard as a female prime minister, we had a female, she was related to the educational portfolio. They actually agreed to do it. And unfortunately then, that was the week after, I think they got turfed out and the next government came in. And, you know, so it's one of the things we're still passionate about. So education, we need to look at all avenues, because unless people realise the importance of breast health, it just won't be dealt with. And the same in the sporting context. So we are doing talks to sporting bodies. We are working with Sports Medicine Australia, and we hopefully then internationally, to normalise the conversation with sport and sport injuries. In terms of science, we've just written two major review papers, both of which talk about where we need to go. And again, I think we need to really much look at multidisciplinary teams during this research. It can't just be biomechanists. It needs to be biomechanists working with engineers, working with fashion designers, working with people involved in the whole psychology of purchasing, of wear, all these types of things. And we need to start looking at a much more diverse group of people that we study. Nearly all of the research that's been done on breast biomechanics has been done on young women under 35. There's very little that's being done with older women. We need, as I said before, to look at lots of work with adolescents. We need to look at people with high BMIs, because again, there's an association between, obviously, the larger you are, the larger your breasts are. Look at women who are pregnant. Look at women who are breastfeeding. People have had breast surgery. What happens to those breasts over time? So there's so many areas that we need to go down to better explore, to really understand the support needs and the long-term effect of this. And I think that'll come hopefully with new generations coming through. I mean, as I said, when we first tried to present, in the 1990s, we first tried to present at an academic conference our breast research work. It was rejected. And I couldn't understand, so I contacted the organisers and I said, could you explain, this is work of a PhD student. And they said, oh, when you come to the conference, we'll explain. So I got to the conference. It wasn't really appropriate. And this was a paper on breast biomechanics. 2005, I was invited to the International Society of Biomechanics in the US to present a keynote address on breast biomechanics. So it started to evolve. It's taken a long time. Even at that talk, though, I wasn't allowed to use the term breast in the title, because it was deemed it would be blocked in search engines. But breast is an anatomical term. It's what we have. We need to acknowledge it. So I think the social acceptance is starting to get better, but we just need to invest more time and money, because it's something that all women, irrespective of your age, your activity desires, your race, whatever, you should be able to go out there and exercise in comfort.
Well, and I was thinking when you were saying, and you did mention adolescence, but this idea of most of the research being in young women, so 18 to 35 year olds is really that space. But when you look at the physical activity data, which is where a lot of my research has been, when you look into the physical activity data, you know that women, that young girls are starting to get out of sport. They're starting to become more sedentary. They're demotivated to be physically active right around the time that puberty hits. And that cannot at all be a coincidence, right? So there has to be that link that is showing that both you're starting to have a growth of breasts, you're starting to have potentially breast pain, you're not asking, you're so embarrassed at that point in time to ask about the right kind of bra to wear and the right kind of apparel you should be using. And then you're just not talking about it, right? At that point, you're embarrassed, and then you just stop doing exercise. And so you wonder what kind of critical role is being played in these young girls' lives to demotivate them to be physically active at such a young age.
Well, that's really interesting. We did, Deidre McGee, my colleague, when she did her PhD back in 2010, she actually did a study looking at the effects of an educational resource on the bra-wearing habits of young girls. So these were 14, 15, 16-year-old girls. They were from academies of sport in Australia. So they are, they're skilled athletes. They're not elite, but they're skilled. And what was really interesting was nearly all of those girls, despite being at academies, failed basic breast health knowledge. So what we did, we had four of these academies. Two were our control, two were our experimental. So the experimental got the results. The controls got other health information. And I mean, New South Wales is a huge, about 15 hours from one end of New South Wales to the other. So apart from testing the knowledge before the actual study, once the study started, she then went back at 1 month and 4 months later. And she went back and retested their knowledge and, more importantly, got a little tent out on their training field so they didn't know she was coming and checked what they were wearing. And we showed that a simple educational resource, and you can get access to that resource if on that same app has a link to the little resource. It's a little bit dated again, but it's still there. It was designed for young girls, so it has little jokes down the side and all kinds of cartoons. We were able to actually increase not only their knowledge, but their bra-wearing behavior. So by empowering these girls, by giving them a fun little resource and just allowing them to read it, not more than that, so we could change their bra-wearing knowledge, but their bra-wearing habits. But what was also really interesting is that because these girls were young, we had some educational sessions with them before the whole thing with their parents, with their mums. And the mums wanted the information because this isn't something that has been available. And so it became a real mother-daughter thing. So I think you're so right. In younger girls, they've got normally relatively good support structure. So they don't need as much support, but it is the change in body shape and the embarrassment associated with breast movement that is more of a barrier for those girls as opposed to older women where breast discomfort becomes the barrier. So we have to look not just at the bras with these young girls, but we also have to look at their sports uniform. And we have to make sure that the sports uniforms aren't so tight and clingy. And again, we have this funny sport in Australia that the Americans would probably never heard of called netball. It's like a religion in Australia, but 90-something% of Australian women have played it. But they've gone to very tight fitted uniforms. So they're kind of little dresses, so to speak, that cling to the bodies. And that, again, doesn't allow these young girls who are conscious about their breasts to have any option of downplaying their growing breasts. So we need to think about not just the bras, but the whole uniforms and the education of these girls so they do feel more comfortable about it.
We did get a question while we've been chatting. I was so involved in the chat that you and I were having that I had not realized we'd gotten a question. But one of our listeners wants to know if the research is done more for women with larger breasts, or how does the research pertain to women with smaller breasts who don't experience as much breast pain due to the movement or to the lack of movement?
So interestingly, most of the research historically has actually been on, I would say, smaller breast women, because they used to say, these women are a B cup, D cup. But again, this whole concept of cup size is the whole bra sizing thing is another issue. But just because you're a D cup doesn't mean you're a large breast. You need to look at the breast volume, because you might be an 8D and it's more about the breadth of your breast rather than the actual having huge breasts. So there's a lot of work has been done on smaller breasts compared to larger. But what we would say, there's also a category called hypertrophic. It's exceptionally large breasts. And again, some of the work that you can find in the literature exactly what to clarify in terms of how many mils the breasts are for small, medium, large. We're saying you need to make sure that there is work done on these very large breasted women. Many of these women struggle terribly to find a bra that fits them. And they're the ones that have the shoulder pain, the neck pain, the headaches, the spine curvature. Some of these women even have problems with their shoulders. Because if you have this thoracic kyphosis, this bending of the upper part of your rib cage, it starts to affect your whole mechanics of your upper torso. So these women with exceptionally large breasts, this is, you know, people used to think, oh, surely it's not, you know, a big problem. And you go, I'm sorry, these are the medical conditions that these women are suffering. And many of them resort to a breast reduction because it's so traumatic in terms of the pain. One of the solutions can be to actually get a well-fitted sports bra. And if you get that support, it allows you to be physically active, because otherwise we have this vicious circle. You have large breasts, you can't find a bra. You can't find a decent bra, so your breasts move a lot if you're trying to be exercised. But you don't want to exercise, because it's uncomfortable. So you stop exercising. You stop exercising, what do? You put on body weight. Oh, surprise, where does that body weight go? A lot of it goes to your breasts. So you have bigger breasts, so you have higher shoulder pressures and poor torso posture. So it becomes this even more exaggerated circle of just being problematic. So we need to intervene to make sure that these women are comfortable so they can exercise, so again they can lose some of that breast mass in a natural way rather than having to revert to surgery.
Julie, a while ago there was a trend going where very small-breasted women were not wearing bras, right? That was part of the I'll wear a tank top and I won't wear a bra kind of space. What kind of risk are they running for further tissue damage, right? So not towards cancer, but towards that sagging towards the tissue damage of either not wearing one or even just wearing the shelf that's part of, say, a tank top, right? So is the shelf bra that's in a tank top really doing anything for you?
Look, again, this is going to depend on your age. If you are really very young, and you have good anatomical support structures because you're young. In other words, your skin is nice and firm and it's thick, and you are doing low levels of activity, you probably can easily get away with a shelf in a little top. If you are someone who has hypertrophic breasts and is older and is wanting out there to go and do a marathon, it ain't going to do any good. So it comes down to, again, looking at your needs. There is no evidence, or no one's done the research. So here is a wonderful PhD for someone to do. We need some kind of longitudinal study that would actually track. Now, it's why hasn't it been done? Because it's a nightmare to control. Because you would need to somehow take a very large cohort of young women and somehow track them for 20 years.
Right.
And you'd have to be saying, you did this when you were such and such age. Let's follow you through and what's happened. We know that excessive breast bounce can lead to pain. We don't know what's actually that pain causing. Is it causing tissue damage or is it your body's warning system going, stop? So we speculate, and you can go and they'll compare women from tribal groups who've never worn a bra and say, look at their breasts, aren't they saggy? Compare them to Caucasian women. The thing is, there are so many cultural differences, dietary, there's lifestyle, there's so many confounding factors that you just can't say this versus that. There was a study done in France, and it was a gentleman who published it widely in the media. It never hit the scientific publications. When he was claiming that wearing a bra, he was measuring the height or something of these women's breasts, again, young women, and he was saying that if they didn't wear a bra, it made them stronger and therefore their breasts that better. The thing is, the reality is there is no muscle in breast.
Right.
Your breast sit on top of some chest muscles. So just by not wearing a bra is not going to, in fact, we've shown that the women with very large breasts end up with weaker in terms of the endurance of the muscles that pull your shoulders back. So because of this hunched thoracic curvature again, they end up having with weak muscles. And one of the exercises is to strengthen those muscles so they can have better posture and less of exaggeration. So is there any evidence that, you know, that the shelf bra will cause damage? No. I would be saying if it is comfortable for you, if it doesn't elicit pain, if your breasts aren't wildly moving everywhere, it's probably fine. I myself do ultramarathons. I run in a compression bra. I don't have enormous breasts, but I find that if I put that compression bra, make it lovely and tight, and put a hydration vest over the top, that's what supports me. So it's very specific to what you do. My biggest problem is then the friction injuries. You get someone out there running for 13, 14 hours, that's another whole thing, is you end up with the worst possible chafing. So you've got to find a bra that doesn't lead to frictional injuries. So again, it's these different problems for different people.
Yeah, and I'll fully admit that I don't run that many hours, and yet there are still friction issues, even if you're just doing a couple of miles, if you're doing up to a 10K, right? There can be definite issues with some of the bras in those spaces.
Oh, and just looking at the components. I mean, just to throw in a real wobbly, I went and did a marathon in Greenland across the polar ice cap. sub-zero, you know, well, again, Celsius, but exceptionally cold. You had to run in three layers. We were not allowed to wear bras that had any metal components, because if they got cold enough and you sweated, then they would freeze and burn you. So again, you need to look at what is appropriate for your needs, your age, your breast size, the activity you are doing, and the environment.
It's fantastic. Actually, I'm going to come back to something you were saying earlier, which was that they have these weaker shoulders because of the weight. But to some extent also, I think it comes back to the socialization issue of, if you have those strong shoulders and you're bringing those shoulder blades back, you're then making those breasts prominent, right? And in a space where you're objectified for this piece of your anatomy, there's a part of you that wants to curl in, that wants to hide them, that wants to keep them from having that prominence, which is so hurtful on so many levels, right? So it's hurtful from a biomechanics point of view, just from your anatomy being in that position, it's hurtful. It's hurtful from a social point of view, and this idea that you are going to be objectified for it and the psychological implications that go with that. But it's more than just the weight of the breast and the biomechanics of the breast. It's the social and this biopsychosocial aspect of it.
And this is why, again, this education is so important. And we need to be empowering women that they shouldn't be objectified. I mean, it's not women's fault, I realize this, but in many cases, we also assume we're going to be objectified. So I think often nothing looks better than a woman who stands upright, good posture, and is proud of her body, irrespective of shape or size or whatever. And the idea is, you're right, there are negative health consequences associated with that rounded shoulder. This is where we need to get in at the school level. Because if these young girls are so embarrassed and they're stooping over and that's going to affect their whole growth. And then consequentially what happens to the upper torso musculoskeletal pain. So we need to, again, you can stand up straight without sticking the breast down. You can, the idea is, this is your body. Be proud, stand tall, good posture, because it has medical implications for you in the long term if you don't. And I think that idea of making sure we're educated to understand this and to be proud of our bodies and not have this pressure constantly we have to hide. Because again, it's like for years I had to fight in the most professional way that we could talk about breast bumpkins. We could talk about women's health issues. And I think as scientists, we need to do it. We need to encourage the media. I remember a very, very, my first media release on the smart bra. The vice chancellor then, who's now changed at the university, asked me to come to his office and to make sure that the university wasn't going to be humiliated by this kind of research. And I assured him, and when explained, you know, started to talk about the health implications of inappropriate breast support. And the same when I do media interviews, often they start off with breast jokes and things like that. And I'm willing to sit there and go, okay, now let's talk about the real health consequences. Let's talk about those women who have to have breast reductions because of the mass of the breast. Let's talk about the women who fractured their collarbones as case studies, because the mass of their breasts and the load going through their shoulder has been high enough on these women who obviously have some issues with the bone strength. But let's talk about these consequences. Then we start to take it seriously. In the review paper, I talk about why women, you know, we've got studies where all the women come in are wearing the wrong size and shape bra. And people say, oh gosh, it can't be rocket science. And I start talking about, well, actually, it's probably more complicated. And it's the sizing system. The bras you buy in America, completely different sizing of how you fit to the bras that we buy here. But online, it's such a mishmash. So there's no standardization of sizing. There isn't education about how to fit bras properly. Every site has their own way telling you different things. So we need to come up with ways that allow women to walk into a shop with confidence to know that what size is there is going to be suitable for them. So there's lots of issues. This is where we need to get the bra manufacturers involved, but they all want their unique concept to be out there, but it's just making it more complicated.
And I think too, when we talk about socializing and educating the young women, I think it's educating young men as well. I think you've got to socialize and normalize all genders towards the anatomy, right? And making sure, because it's not just, I mean, this podcast is specifically about breast health, but there are male specific health issues as well, and that are simply not talked about nearly as much as they should be because they're uncomfortable conversations, because they deal with anatomy that for one form or another has been ostracized or denormalized to the conversation. And it can really lead to very serious health implications.
Well, one of the things we actually did at the last sports med conference in Australia here was actually had a panel discussion of breast injuries. And we deliberately invited some male or coaches of female football teams. So these are funny games again in Australia, Australian rules football, which is very much a contact sport, the rugby league, the rugby union. So we had both females and male players and coaches and medicos on that panel. And you could see this was a male coach of an elite female contact team. And you could see him go, wow. But we have the resources we're trying to do with these sports are to make it comfortable that any person, whether you're a male or female, can be comfortable with that conversation. Because we have both, as you say, both males and female school teachers. So if we make resources for the school, we wanted to make a resource that we could give to anyone, whether it's male or female, who feels confident or not, and let's say, well, if you want to do this, here's the resource that you can present. If you feel uncomfortable, here's a CD or whatever you call it now, the new technology. You could upload this new talk, and here's your resource that allows you to be able to present this feeling comfortable. And you can sit back and watch it with your clients. So it's that whole idea of, look, it's a long way to go. And again, culturally, different cultures, it's more appropriate to talk about this than other cultures. But we need to, because we have to allow and empower women to be comfortable when they exercise.
We did have one other question that just came through who wanted to understand some suggestions on where to start when trying to look for a bra. So you mentioned the straps, you mentioned the cups, you mentioned the band, but you know, most stores just have basics and they're not very supporting. So do you even know, I think she wants to know less about the characteristics and more about, are there specific companies that we should start with that are better in terms of supportive bras? We talked about how they all are very unique, but are there different? And I know that Australia in particular has different brands than we have in the United States, but is there a place that we should start?
Again, this is why we got the Sports Bra Act. And the Sports Bra app is, it actually says, okay, help. So if you go into a store, any store, and again, what you've got to realize is that, well, it's not just about going to stores at the moment with COVID, and most of this is done online. And so again, it's becoming more difficult because to me, you need to put these bras on. And both the resource and the app, it actually says characters to look at. So you put your age into it, you put the activity level, and it gives you suggestions saying, oh, you could go with a crop top, or you could go, and then it shows you pictures of the characteristics in any bra to look for. And then it shows you how to fit a bra, how to put it on. And then we've got examples of pictures that show if it's too big, too small, because you can, it's a bit like shoes. You can have the best shoes. If they don't fit you, they're not going to work as they were designed for. So you can have the best bra, but if it doesn't fit you, it's not going to provide the support you need. So it's, again, I'm very reluctant to say this company makes the best bras in that, because, again, what you need is very different to what I would need. So I'd be saying, have a look at the app. It's www.bra.edu.au for Australia /sports/bra. That will work, should work on any computer program. And if you follow the little instructions, it helps you where to start. Because many bras are really expensive, but just because they cost a lot doesn't mean they are necessarily better. So I've had women, in fact, this has just been translated into Italian, because one of the breast cancer surgeons wanted to be able to give some information for his patients to go and look for a bra. So we're hoping to update it, but at the moment it should be able to give you, even if you go into a department store, check their return policy. Online, check their return policy. So maybe go and look at their fitting instructions, what they're giving online. Order a few with the idea that you can return the ones that don't fit, you know. So then you can look at the idea of, I think this has the right characteristics. I think this will be okay. Let me try it on at home. Let stand in front of your mirror, jog on the spot. We used to have what we call the bouncer meter, which used to give the girls. And it was the idea of your bosoms are bouncing and flopping around everywhere. It's not supportive. Do you feel comfortable? One thing I really have to stress, we're not about stopping breast movement. There's lots of bras that and ad campaigns, particularly I think Burley and with Serena Williams were saying only the balls will bounce. We need to stop breast motion. It's not about stopping it. It's soft tissue. It's never going to stop. It's about stopping what we call the breast flap. And that's where your breasts rise. And as your foot hits the ground and your body stops, your breasts still move downward until they reach the end range. And it's that slap down that we want to control. So the idea is to put the bra on and jog. And does it stop that slapping down motion of the breast? That's what we want. So yes, there is a reduction in motion. You're not going to stop it completely. It'd be so uncomfortable. Just think we'd get some tape and we'd strap you right up and it would stop, but it would be so uncomfortable. So it's about controlling the breast motion, particularly that downward slack that we call it, that you experience. And that's when you're jumping up and down or you're running up and down that vertical torso motion.
All right. Julie, I think that's a great place to stop. I want to thank you again for taking the time to speak with us today. And a huge thank you to our audience for taking the time to engage. We will have another podcast in 2 weeks, so please join us next time as we speak with Associate Professor Lee Signal from the Sleep Wake Research Center at Massey University in Wellington, New Zealand. She will be discussing circadian rhythms and healthy sleep habits just in time for the clocks to fall back. Information about our podcast and other learning opportunities can be found on our website and social media pages. Tyler, can you tell our friends how to find us on the World Wide Web, please?
Yeah, we have Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for our social medias. They're all the same, Seattle U Kinesiology. And we also have a website where we archive all our podcasts. That can be found at seattleu.edu/kinesiology.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We usually archive our podcast by the following Monday. No pressure, Tyler. But we will archive this podcast with those links that I've already included into the panel chat as well for those that are joining us live. Thank you so much. That's all we have time for today. Thanks again. And remember, be kind, be healthy, and be active.